I'm Sam Roggeveen. I'm here with Ewan Graham, author of a new Lowy Institute analysis paper, The Lion and the Kangaroo, Australia's Strategic Partnership with Singapore. Ewan, welcome. I want to start the conversation by quoting a paragraph from the paper, which I think sets the strategic context in which you situate the paper. You say, Australia's contemporary strategic environment more closely resembles the pre-war period than it does the Cold War, when Southeast Asia was a theatre for proxy strategic rivalry between the superpowers. What makes the comparison compelling is that the US-led global security system is coming under direct challenge regionally from a major Asian power for the first time in 70 years. And I think what you say is that that's a necessary precondition for this new Australia-Singapore strategic relationship that you go on to describe.
That's right. I mean, the comparison has its limits. I'm not suggesting that we're in the prequel to 1941. But nonetheless, the relationship between Australia and Singapore, particularly after the way it was announced earlier this month, in many people's eyes will be seen as rather one-dimensional, because the focus was on Singapore's defence interests, particularly training access in Australia. The point I wanted to get across is that it's a two-way street, and that for Australia, the increased focus on Southeast Asia makes Singapore strategically more important from a national security perspective, and that there are advantages that Singapore offers depth too, in a way that's less obvious than the depth for Australia offering space that Singapore lacks to train its armed forces.
Ewan, you say that Australia and Singapore have gravitated into each other's strategic orbits for a mix of push and pull reasons. Can you talk about some of those reasons?
Australia offers Singapore space and depth that it lacks. That's the most obvious defence interest in the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. But what Singapore offers Australia is a different kind of depth. Depth in terms of its geostrategic position within Southeast Asia, next to the South China Sea, next to the Malacca Strait, and there is long-term continuity in that. And that's borne out in the recent white paper and the focus that it puts on Southeast Asia as an area in which Australia is going to be more heavily engaged in terms of its defence diplomacy, also in terms of its operations in future. What Singapore offers is dependability, long-term continuity. And of course, one obvious thing that the two countries have in common is Indonesia as a neighbour. I don't mean to suggest that the CSP is a reaction to that relationship with Indonesia, but both countries have a difficulty in terms of finding long-term reliable defence partners. And that's one obvious reason why they've gravitated towards each other.
Now, you referred there to the CSP, that's the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. Can we just lay out briefly exactly what that agreement is and what it means for both countries?
Well, strategic is an overused term in diplomacy. Cynics might say it's an easy label to make a bilateral relationship sound more interesting than it is. But in some cases, I think it's deserved, and this is one of them. Singapore tends to go about its defence partnerships subtly and quietly. Australia is no exception to that. And at the core of it, there is a quid pro quo. Australia is seeking enhanced economic access to Singapore and through Singapore, Southeast Asia. The corollary of that is that Singapore is seeking enhanced defence access to the already substantial training that it does here in terms of doubling the numbers of personnel who will come here annually, up to 14,000. The defence component of the CSP is 25 years, so it shows you again this is a very long-term substantial investment. And it's also significant that the investment is being financially borne by the Singapore government, which we're told is investing $2.25 billion over that duration in order to upgrade the facilities at Shoalwater Bay, Townsville, as well as the other existing interactions that it has, both with the Australian Defence Forces, but also it offers space, depth and tropical conditions that allow Singapore to train in a way that it can't do anywhere else overseas.
So a 25-year agreement, a substantial financial cost, as you described, to the Singaporeans, a substantial political and diplomatic commitment from both sides. This implies, doesn't it, all of it, a fairly deep strategic convergence between the two. And yet, there is still a sense that there are some fairly major differences between the two countries in their outlooks, and particularly on the question of China. And you talk about this a bit in your paper.
Yes. If the reason why Australia is becoming more interested in Southeast Asia is a reflection of that fundamental balance of power and the rise of a new Asian power in the form of China that is long-term bent on changing the status quo, and particularly in regards to the forward presence of the United States, then that puts Singapore in a particularly uncomfortable position. Singapore has, throughout its independent history, consciously sought to create a benign balance. For the most part, that's been a close security relationship with the United States, but it's been handled discreetly because Singapore also seeks basically to give as wide a stake to all comers in its prosperity and security as possible. That means juggling a relationship with China in the same way that other countries in the region have done. But what adds an extra layer of discomfort on top of that, Singapore is a 75% ethnic Chinese polity. So there are clearly going to be domestic limits on how far the Singaporean government, however worried they may be privately about China's actions, in terms of aligning militarily with the United States and its allies. And of course, Australia is the closest ally of the United States in the region.
So then just finally, Ewan, is the conclusion we draw from all that that the Singaporeans see this agreement very much in a utilitarian way, and we shouldn't look at this as a sort of deep meeting of values between these two nations?
That's a key question. I think those who've sold the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership would argue that this goes beyond the so-called transactional prism of Singaporean decision-making. That's one criticism that's often put at it. And Tony Abbott, when he was Prime Minister, went further than others in terms of selling the confluence of values. And the specific comparison put forward was that this was going to be as close as any other country could get to the unique bond between Australia and New Zealand. There are common areas that are in common between Australia and Singapore that go beyond simple material capabilities. There is an appreciation of the common rule of law. But more than that, it's a fundamental shared strategic mindset, a willingness to commit for the long term. And these are, in the end, more important than the number of F-15s, the number of F-16s, whether we use defense equipment that's made commonly in the United States. It ultimately comes down to the reliability of those partners and the political judgments that they make about their strategic environment. And in that, I think there's a very large, and is likely to continue to be, a very large degree of overlap. But this is not an alliance, and this gets to the question about China, that there is going to be flexibility that Singapore will preserve and how far it wants to get down that track. The defence component, from Singapore's point of view, is utilitarian to the extent that Australia offers real estate in a way that other countries can't. I think from the Australian side, what they'd like to see is that relationship becoming more genuinely bilateral at the defence level. There is a basis for doing that. We've both been in the five-power defence arrangements since 1971, since their formation. And Australia gains from Singapore in the same way that Singapore gains from defence access to Australia. But there is a sense sometimes in which Singapore has been seen to use the defence access to train with itself. And I think that's the potential of the relationship, is to make sure that it does become more bilateralized. And that gets to the depth of the relationship beyond government to government. Part of the reason for the ups and downs in the Australian-Indonesian relationship is because they've been very solely reliant on the government-to-government link. What gives extra depth to the Singapore relationship is that there is a genuine sense in which those people-to-people bonds, the economic commonalities, gird the relationship, provide a wider foundation that means that it goes beyond, I think, the promises of one particular administration to the next.
Ewan Graham, thanks for your time.
Thank you.